Off the Leash is a book that is a look at a year at a dog park, and it's a look at both the four-legged and the two-legged inhabitants that are in the dog park. And the author of that is Matthew Gilbert. He is the TV critic for the Boston Globe and Boston.com. His work has appeared in a number of places, including on NPR, and he joins us to talk about the book today. Welcome, Matthew.
Oh, it's great to be with you, Mel.
If anyone has any questions today about dogs or dog parks, a reminder that you can reach us at 800-838-3760 in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or email jx@jeffnet.org. Well, Matthew, you describe yourself as not really a dog person. I think a lot of folks probably, they form an attachment or a lack of attachment to animals when they're young. They become a dog person or a cat person or a none-of-the-above person. But you came to be a dog person as an adult. Tell us a little bit about that process.
Yeah. You know, I grew up in a home where we never had a dog. And my mother was and continues to be terrified of dogs. Maybe she had an incident when she was a child. I don't know. But so I really grew up not knowing anything about dogs. And, you know, if I found myself in the presence of a dog, I was always afraid. If I touched something that a dog had touched, you know, my hand would buzz until I could get to a faucet. So I just continued to be that way. And then in my early 40s, I fell in love with a person, and, you know, I think when you fall in love, you open up, your heart opens up a bit, and maybe you're open to new things. And I also fell in love with a dog person. He didn't have a dog at the time, but every member of his family had at least one dog. So I found myself thrown together with dogs, and, you know, I just got used to it, and before I knew it, I converted, you know, and which is great because I love the idea of having a growth spurt when you're in your 40s, you know. We tend to think, okay, I'm in my 40s, I am who I am, this is it, that's, you know, written in stone. And so it's great when something like this surprises you. So, yeah, now I'm, you know, I mean, talk about germ phobia. I kiss my dog, Toby, on his snout every day, at least, you know, 50 times. And I don't even think about where it's been, you know. So I'm a full dog person now.
And Toby is a yellow lab, isn't he?
Yes, he is. He's the book chronicles my first year with him, but he's 10 now.
Tell me a little bit about, did you initially just start taking him out on walks? What was the idea to take him to the dog park?
Yeah, you know, taking him out for walks was lovely and all, but every time he would see another dog, I could see him change, you know. It was a kind of joy and excitement that I think people were not providing him with. And somebody finally said to me, you know, your dog should be going to the dog park. He's a social dog. So I gave it a try. You know, I'm not a group person necessarily. I spend a lot of time, you know, watching TV as the TV critic for the Globe. And I'm not a complete introvert, but I tend more toward that end of the spectrum. But I had a social dog, you know, that would not be denied. I mean, you know, the first time I took him to the park and I saw just how excited he was to see his own people and, you know, wrestle and run around, I just had to keep taking him there. So he sort of pulled me into that world.
So he was a natural for the dog park. What was your first impression of the dog park? How did you feel? Were you apprehensive?
I was, and I remained so for a few months. You know, dog people in general can be eccentric, and at the dog park, you get such a wide mixture of people. I mean, you get people of all ages and from all walks of life, And so you're thrown together with people that you probably wouldn't normally be mixing with. And so at first I just thought, oh, this is strange. And I kind of, my loner side kicked in. And while Toby would play, I would kind of stand off alone. But, gradually I kind of fell in with it. And now I'm just madly in love with it. I look forward to my daily or twice daily park visits probably as much, if not more, than Toby at this point.
Was it the dogs that brought you sort of to a comfort zone there, or was there a person in particular that sort of made you feel at ease?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's a combination, but I think being around dogs that are playing and feeling joy is infectious. I mean, you get a contact high. And so I think the people standing around the dogs that are playing and sniffing at each other, the people are also kind of feeling a little bit less controlled, less wary of other people, perhaps less edited. At least that's the case for me, and I see it all the time with people. They get to the dog park, and before you know it, they're just talking up a storm. So I think being around dogs and their spontaneity can be contribute to the way you feel when you're in a dog park. But then there's also just the community that is built around the dogs. I think it's a fairly unusual kind of social environment or subculture, because you're intimate with these people. You're seeing them every day, sometimes twice a day. So I've had conversations at the dog park with people about life and death and, the loss of a parent and parenting. And yet, at the same time, I don't know their last names. It's an intimate relationship, but it's also kind of got a streak of anonymity about it. You don't really know each other outside of that domain. So it's a kind of fun relationship in that way.
We're talking with Matthew Gilbert, the author of Off the Leash. We'll be back with Matthew and your comments and questions right after this short break. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Milt Radford, filling in today for Jeffrey Riley. We are speaking with Matthew Gilbert. He's the author of a new book, Off the Leash, A Year at the Dog Park. If you have any questions about dogs and getting them into the dog park, give us a call at 800-838-3760 in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or send us an email, jx@jeffnet.org. Matthew, I want to talk a little bit about, I was thinking that there was a time decades ago, before we were all connected on the internet and having our virtual social lives, that people would often go out and they would assemble together at a Little League baseball game or a bunch of other different things. And in the audience, you'd have folks who were very different politically and otherwise, and they would communicate with one another. We've lost a lot of that, but it struck me in reading your book that the dog park is one place where we have that activity again.
Absolutely. I think we're all, on a digital leash at this point. And as a TV critic, I watch 25 hours of TV a week at least. And then I sit down at my computer and write about it. And then I go out, and while I'm out, I check my phone constantly. So I find that the dog park is a great place to have a sort of daily off button, you know, to just not be on the digital leash. And I see other people doing that as well. I mean, we stay in the moment of the dogs. You have to watch your dog to make sure that he or she is behaving properly, not being aggressive or being victimized by another dog. You have to watch to make sure you're prepared to pick up your dog's precious production.
Yes.
You know, you really, some people come to the dog park and stay on the phone, and I feel badly for them because I think they're missing just a great opportunity to, for one, at least 1 hour in their day, really be in the moment and not sort of somewhere else.
Let me ask you about dog park rules. I would think that, you know, as you probably go to most dog parks in America, there's probably some posted rules, the official rules, and there's probably some that are unofficial that you learn about. Talk a little bit about that. What's good behavior on the part of both the dogs and the owners at the park?
Yeah. Well, you know, it almost always comes back to the owners. But I think what everybody knows is, number one, you have to always pick up your dog's poop. It's just essential to creating an enjoyable park environment and experience. So everybody talks about that a lot. But I think even more importantly, the second, you know, explicit rule is that if you have a dog with aggression issues, you need to be extremely, you know, careful about that. You need to, if you're going to let your dog off leash, you need to really scrutinize him or her to see if there are going to be any triggers. If, you know, otherwise you need to keep your dog on the leash. And so that's really, you know, in my book, my book is really a celebration of this kind of community of the dog park, but there are one or two villains, and they are people who are not willing to own their dog's aggression.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you own your dog's aggression, if you show up at the park with your dog on a leash and say, this is a rescue dog, he has some issues, you know, I want to try to help him work through that, people will really support you and try to help you. If you show up with an aggressive dog that maybe attacked a dog at another park, you know, until you're moving on to yet another park where nobody knows you, and you let your dog off leash and it attacks another dog and you get defensive and you leave without even offering to, you know, help, you're a bad person. So those are the explicit rules.
Mm-hmm.
The unspoken rules are more sort of about, you know, do you take a dog park friendship outside of the park, you know? The rule is you have to, if you're going to pursue that, you have to do that extremely carefully. You know, you have such lovely friendships in the park, and sometimes you want to move them outside of the park, but you need to initiate that only if you're pretty certain the other person wants it too. Otherwise, you know, it can be awkward.
I'd like you to share with us maybe an example or two. We could probably spread them out through the show this morning, but an example or two of some of the people you met in the park. One of the ones, Kai, that you mentioned early on, seemed like an interesting character. Could you talk a little bit about him?
Yes. And I should say that the people in the book are all disguised a little bit.
Right.
You know, he is a guy who, like some people, you know, came to the park every day for a few months and then kind of disappeared. But I learned early in his tenure at the park that he did not believe in picking up dog poop. For him, that, you know, he was a guy who at points in his life was eating, you know, all raw meat diets. And, you know, he was an organic fellow, and I liked him. He was very into poetry and a character. But his belief that, you know, dust to dust and poop to dirt, was really a deal breaker for me. Yes, and you know what happens. What I figured out while I was writing the book is that the people who pick up their dog's poop are always the ones who step in dog poop. You know, people who don't pick up their dog's poop never step in dog poop.
That's the Murphy's Law of dog poop.
Yes, it's this weird karmic twist. So,
yeah, with this cast of characters that you met in there, you describe in the book that it's kind of like group therapy. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, I think that's that interesting mix of intimacy and anonymity, you know, that you would get in group therapy, where you're forming these sometimes intense bonds in a certain location, and then leaving that location and leaving those relationships there. And you know, when you're in group therapy with people, you don't necessarily know their last names or anyone in their family or where they live, and that's what it's like in the park. So, you know, there's a safe aspect of being in the dog park. People tell me stories that I don't think some of their best friends know. You know, it's liberating. It's, you know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, and so people go to Vegas and get crazy. And I think there's an analogy there with the dog park. I mean, people come and they talk out their issues in a way that feels very safe to them because they know it's not going to follow them back into their lives.
It's easier for them to discuss this with a stranger or a semi-stranger.
Exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about letting go. It seems like that would be a part of the process before you would open up about some of your darkest secrets in life. Is it the fact that folks are thrown in there together and they just have to sort of get to know each other eventually? Or is it the fact that the dogs are so free and open? What is allowing the humans in there to let go?
Yeah, I honestly believe that it's the presence of the dogs. You know, in many ways, I mean, as I mentioned earlier, you know, when you're among dogs, you're in an environment where there's a lot of spontaneous movement and play, and you do get a contact high from that. And also, in addition to that, I think we all have a soft spot for our dogs, and we're bringing that with us to the park. You know, we're showing that dog love and that mushy side of ourselves in front of other people. And I think just that you know, revealing that to these other people brings you together. You know, some of the people at the dog park are people I wouldn't think that I had nothing in common with until we start talking about how much we love our dogs and the crazy things they do and the ways that they make us laugh. And I realize we have so much in common.
We are speaking with Matthew Gilbert. He is the author of the book Off the Leash, and it's A Year at the Dog Park. If you have a question for Matthew about dogs or dog parks or people at the dog parks, give us a call, 800-838-3760, in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or send us an email, jx@jeffnet.org. Have you been able to remain friends with people at the dog park, folks who have moved on perhaps to another location?
Yeah, it is interesting how that goes. You know, I think in every relationship, proximity is an important, element. I mean, when people move to the other side of the country, it takes a lot more effort to stay close. And I think that happens when somebody's dog passes away or when they move. You do tend to lose touch. Maybe you maintain a social media connection, but I don't tend to see people who've left the park that much. I have formed a number of friendships that at the park that I've taken outside the park and that have survived that leap into the real world. I consider those three or four people among my closest friends in the world. So on that level, yes, those people will always be in my life. But a lot of people come and go at the park, and you feel close to them, but once they've moved on, maybe you drift, and they just become part of your sort of scrapbook of dog park memories.
Professionally, you work as a television critic. I'm wondering if when you first visited the dog park or today, if you sort of evaluate the situations in that same kind of critical eye, or have you changed the way you look at a dog park?
Absolutely, I do. Well, that's a great question. I think I do tend to look at everything as some sort of story, you know, and because television stories are what I spend most of my time watching and writing about, I do often go to the park and think that's right out of a sitcom or that's right out of a drama. So I do bring that lens to the park, but again, it is different, you know. It's life, and unexpected, unscripted things happen. So, as much as I like to, you know, sort of impose that frame on it, I think it is its own thing.
Are dog parks a fairly recent invention? I don't recall ever seeing a dog park when I was a kid. People just sort of let their dogs run wild.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's a definitely an up-and-coming thing, and there are already, you know, thousands of dog parks across the country, and the number is growing. And it's, you know, people, more and more people are forming connections with dogs, you know, getting dogs and really bonding with them and wanting to treat them well. And if you live in a city, a dog park is just a natural for that.
We have Jacob on the line from Springfield. Go ahead, Jacob.
Hi. Whenever parents get together and the children are playing in the playground, they always compare their babies or their toddlers and their kids, and they kind of boast about intelligence, you know, that how far my kid is advanced, what things that he could do, and how brilliant that I see him, you know, behaving. But I actually... And there's something regarding intelligence in dogs, and they always kind of rate different breeds. And, you know, there's some dogs who probably could, you know, outthink a kindergarten in class. But in some ways, I wanted to defend the dumb dog. That the dogs, their natural state is kind of goofy, dumb, and kind of clownish. And having a dumb dog is actually a benefit in some ways, because if you, let's say, forget to come home one day and let your dog out or take them to the dog park, they'll greet you the next time you see them just as if, you know, they're fresh and very forgiving, and they don't remember what you just did to them. You know, they don't remember that they had to sleep in their own urine or anything like that. They're very forgiving. But a smart dog actually might not forgive you and might try to get revenge on you, and I think that's the problem with cats sometimes, if they're too smart. So what I'm just saying is that intelligence isn't everything.
Your response to that.
I love that call, Jacob. I totally agree with you. I mean, there is something really appealing and lovely about a dog's resilience. And, you know, my dog makes me laugh every single day with some of the stupid things he does. And he knows that he makes me laugh, and that, I think, makes him do things more frequently. I don't detect the same kind of competition among dog owners about their dog's intelligence as I do about, you know, new parents. I think that people at the dog park understand that, you know, dogs, even the smartest dogs, really aren't that intelligent. And I think I haven't experienced the kind of snobbery and competition that we tend to think of when we think of, you know, children's playgrounds.
Well, I will defend the dumb dog because I have one, but they're fine. They're sweet, right?
Yeah.
Next, let's go to Steve in Eugene. Steve, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you. I'm really enjoying this show today, and I appreciate the author making the time to write the book, because every word he's saying is exactly true from my experiences of going to dog parks for about 15 years up here. One thing I'd really like to point out is I think that, you know, we throw the word diversity around a lot today, and we all want to think that we accept diversity and value it. But really, the only place I found where diversity is accepted and valued is at a dog park. The dogs among themselves, and the people, too. When he was talking about that you meet and sit and talk with people that you would never interact with in regular life, your cultures are just, you just wouldn't cross paths with most of them. Different ages, different cultures, different politics, everything. But at a dog park, everybody's there for the same thing, for their dogs to have a good time. And oh, you know, you just meet great people there, although you don't learn the people's first names. You learn almost everything about their dogs. You just barely know the people's names. And he's right about how the friendships, it's hard to transfer the friendships out of a dog park. So I've really enjoyed this show today, yes.
Thank you, Steve.
I enjoy most of the Jefferson Public Radio broadcasting.
Well, Matthew, you do meet a lot of interesting people there, don't you?
Yeah, his comment reminded me of a time I was at the park, and I, you know, oddly enough, I was there alone, and there was a guy walking toward me from across the field, and you know, I weigh about 170 pounds, and he was twice as big as me, and really built up, lots of tattoos, piercings all over the place, and oh. And he got to me, and I thought, oh, who is this guy? Oh, my God, should I be scared? And then when he got to me, he knelt down and saw Toby and started going, blah, 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 blah.
Turned
and
into a
softie. It was so sweet. It was lovely.
We are talking today with Matthew Gilbert, author of the book Off the Leash, A Year at the Dog Park. We'll be back with more of your questions and comments right after this short break. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Milt Radford, filling in today for Jeffrey Riley. We're talking about dogs and dog parks and some of the fun things that go on there. If you'd like to join the conversation, anywhere in the area, 800-838-3760, Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or send us an email, jx@jeffnet.org. Well, as I'm looking at this, Matthew, one of the things I wondered about is just, I'll give you a personal example. I ride my bike most days, and there's a dog park in my neighborhood, and I slow down and I look at the dog. Sometimes I stop. It makes me happy. I laugh a little bit and I ride on, but I almost never take my dog to the dog park. Does the dog park, and I know there's a, we've talked about the differences between people at the dog park, but are there some striking similarities? Is there a type of person who would go to the dog park?
You know, I think the only thing that we automatically share is that we love our dogs and that we believe that they need to socialize. So I think, you know, those are the givens and what we all share. Otherwise, I don't think you can assume anything about anyone there.
Give me another story about someone you met at the dog park.
One of my favorite people is a woman named Margot, who is just one of the most chaotic people I've ever met. I mean, she gets to the park and her dog is running off stealing other dogs' balls, and she's busy talking to someone about, you know, the latest philosophy book she's reading. She's wearing, you know, pajama bottoms and clogs, and she has toothpaste stains on her lips. And she is, you know, at first I cringed. I just thought, oh, my God, this lady is all over the place. And now I can't wait to see her. She's one of my favorite people. I love her energy. I love the relationship she has with her dog, who always keeps her on her toes. I mean, that's one of the fun things that I've kind of noticed, is that we get the dog that we need and not necessarily the dog that we want. You know, we all have these relationships with our dogs that bring out certain things in us. And, you know, for me, Toby brought out this playful social side. You know, he pulled me into that. You know, sometimes you get a dog that's kind of like you, but often you get a dog that is unlike you in significant ways and that challenges you. You know, and so I noticed with this woman, Margot, that her dog is constantly forcing her to try to focus, which does not come, you know, naturally to her. And it's fascinating, the relationships we form with our dogs.
Politics in America have become so polarized. I mean, do we need to send members of Congress to the dog park? Would that help?
Oh, there's my bumper sticker. Yes. Yes, we do. We do.
Do you still visit the same dog park, or have you changed dog parks? You mentioned earlier that some people move on for whatever reason.
Yes. I have experimented at other dog parks just to see what the culture was like and whether or not it was like my dog park. And for a year, our park was closed, and so we were forced to kind of emigrate. But primarily, I'm loyal to Amory Park. You know, it's so convenient for me, and I look forward to seeing people there, the regular cast as well as the, you know, guest stars. And so I'm a one dog park kind of guy for the most part.
Let me ask this question as delicately as I can. Intimacy at the dog park. And I'm talking four-legged intimacy here at the dog park.
yes, indeed.
How do you handle that?
That's just, you know, when I first got to the dog park and some older dogs were trying to hump Toby, I was out of my mind. I couldn't believe it. It just seemed so horrible and embarrassing. You know, my little baby. And then one day, you know, when Toby was a little bit older, I saw him jumping up on another dog. So I had to learn that lesson. It's dog behavior. It's not about sex in most cases. It's about, you know, dominance play and hierarchy play. And, I've gotten okay with it. Dogs still hump Toby, and it doesn't bother me. It does bother some owners. And, you know, if it bothers another owner, you need to stop it. You need to pull your dog off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you always need to respect the other owner, even if you think the other owner is being irrational. You know, it's just about getting along. And, you know, I find, for instance, there are owners who bring their dogs. The dogs start playing, and the owner gets nervous because he or she can't quite intuit the difference between, you know, slightly rough play and full-on aggression. And so those people will also often intervene and try to pull the dogs apart, and you kind of want to say to them, you know, relax. But you can't. You know, mm-hmm. You might try to talk to them, but you have to respect what they want in the moment.
Let's check in now with Lauren in Phoenix. Go ahead, Lauren.
Hi there. Can you hear me? I can barely hear you.
I can hear you.
Okay, you're kind of distant, but anyway, this is really interesting. I love dogs. I actually have never had my own dog, so one. I have a comment and a question. One thing I think is unusual is that your guest was able to make friendships who become very close outside the dog park. I often think we're really good in the United States about telling some of our most intimate things to total strangers and people who you'll never see out of this one kind of situations where you don't have to have any kind of a commitment to someone. So that's pretty great, and I don't think it's all that common. I would love to have a dog, but there is a deal breaker. I have lived with dogs that were allowed to poop in the yard, and I've taken care of dogs where I didn't have to pick up their poop. And I just don't think I can do it. And I wonder if your guest knows any other way besides the plastic bag.
That's interesting.
That is interesting. I love that question because there's actually a chapter in my book. Early on, when I started going to the dog park, I always carried, and even on the sidewalk, I always carried Purell, you know, antibacterial lotion, because I was, even though I had very sturdy plastic bags, I still just, I couldn't get over the whole idea of it. I don't know of any other way to pick up a dog's poop than to, you know, use a plastic bag. I'm sure that there is some sort of device that maybe is used to pick up garbage in parks or something that doesn't ask you to bend over, you know, that you can just sweep the poop into the container or something. But maybe there's a listener out there who knows better. But I think you always need to, you know, resort to the plastic bags. We no longer collect plastic bags from, you know, the supermarket or whatever. We buy them. So they're, because the whole idea of a ripped bag is just not a pleasing one.
Matthew, we have a caller who would like to know about dogs getting diseases at the park. Does that happen very often?
You know, I have never heard of that happening. You know, there anecdotally, it hasn't happened in the 10 years of Toby's life, you know, where there was something going around the park or where an owner came back and said, you know, my vet said my dog caught something at the dog park. So maybe that possibility exists, but I haven't encountered it.
Do you think a dog should have at least some basic training before they're introduced to a dog park?
Yes, absolutely. You know, one of the rules of the dog park that I didn't mention earlier is that you really do need to have some kind of control over your dog. I mean, we all struggle to have verbal control. And so, you know, you need to sort of continually work on that. And if you know, you need to be able to call your dog away from somebody that might be afraid. So I think it's important, if you're going to go to the park with a dog, to you know, have some basic sense of control over your dog, for sure.
There's four seasons in a dog park. How do you approach those?
Well, they each offer different challenges. You know, in the summer, the dogs get so hot, and you really have to be sure to always have water in a bowl, and that you make sure that your dog does not overheat. I think some owners aren't sensitive enough to that. In the winter, of course, you're standing around, and the dogs are comfortable. You know, they most of them would rather be in the cold environment, but you're freezing. So then that presents the owners with certain challenges. You know, every season has some pluses and some minuses, but you see the hardcore dog park people there no matter what. I mean, it can be pouring rain in the morning, and I know that I'm going to find a few people there huddled in nylon and, you know, with their dogs running around in the mud.
Let's check in with Grumpy John in Grants Pass. Go ahead.
Hi. For that lady that was a little squeamish about picking up dog lumps, go to Harbor Freight. For about $5, $6, you can get a package of latex gloves. Put on your latex gloves and then use your dog bag. You know, sanitation is not that far away. And she could also carry along a little shovel arrangement as well. So please don't let dog lumps scare you away from having a dog. I love my dog. There's 7 billion people on this planet, but I'd push over a cliff before I allowed anybody else her over a cliff. I promise. So please don't let sanitation stop you. Go to Harbor Freight, get your latex gloves and start enjoying life with a dog.
Oh, thank you, John.
Bye.
Great message.
Yeah, and they do have those like little, you know, like the little gardening spades or whatever. Then
right.
And some of those tools, and even if you have a latex allergy, there's the non-latex gloves that you can buy in bulk too. And yeah,
right. I mean, something like that should not get in the way of letting such a wonderful thing into your life. I will never be without a dog again. He makes me happy every day. He heals me. He's my role model because he's so resilient. You know, there's no real reason not to get a dog.
See, that was going to be my next question. What has Toby taught you over the years?
Oh, God. I mean, so many things, different things every day. But overall, I want to say that he's taught me to no more drama. Let go of the drama, you know. Don't get upset or anxious about things that don't merit it, you know. He's such a calm, cool, collected character. You know, he takes life in stride. He waits for good stuff. And I learn that from him every day.
We have time for one more caller. Let's go to Alex in Ashland. Go ahead, Alex.
Hi. Two comments on the continuing saga of poop. One, a little tongue-in-cheek, but semi-serious. The woman who's hesitant to pick it up, I'll tell you this, in the winter, a little bag, plastic bag of dog poop can be used as a hand warmer. My wife is kind of balked when I suggested she use it as a nose warmer. It was over her limit. As for the scoops, at the Ashland Dog Park, although they have the plastic bags, they also have scoops that you can use for picking up poop without bending over, which was an issue brought up. And last, I got one disappointing dog park story. One of our first dogs, we got him from the pound.
Alex, we're running real short on time, so we'll have to cut you off there. Sorry about that. So one final real quick question for you, Matthew, that I had. Do you now regard yourself as a natural dog person, or do you still struggle a little bit at times?
I never struggle for a second. Well, I am a complete dog lover.
Well, that's good to hear. And Toby is healthy and happy as he's getting older? And
he is. So far, so good. You know, he's my first dog, and I mean, I think about losing him every day. I've thought about it since the day I got him. And then I realized that I need to appreciate him while he's here. And that's another one of those things I learn every day from him.
We've been talking with Matthew Gilbert, author of Off the Leash, about his experience at the dog park and dog park culture. Thank you, Matthew, for being on The Exchange today.
Oh, thank you so much, Milt.